You are listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week, we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We are your hosts, Sarah Cho.
And Sam Collier. And today, we have a very special guest. We're so excited to introduce Charlie Yvonne Simpson, who's a playwright, TV writer, and teacher living in Brooklyn. Charlie, welcome to Beckett's Babies.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. Well, we're so excited to talk to you. This episode has been a long time coming.
It has, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And so we like to start off every episode with a question. What is your earliest memory? Could you tell us a little bit about who you were before you ever became a playwright?
What was my earliest memory? This is when I admit that I like actually remember very little from being young. Now my brain is like trying to go. I don't think this is my earliest memory, but this is what's coming to mind. I remember being at we called them like my cousins, but we were really just like close family friends. Mm-hmm. And we were over their house and like it was late, and I feel like I was like maybe in my mom's lap or something. So I was young enough to like, you know, be a lap child. And I feel like the adults in the room were like sort of talking about like, I don't know if it was multiple stories, but like I call her my Aunt Kim. Like my Aunt Kim was talking about how she like thought the house that we were in and that she lived in with her family had like some spirits still in it.
Oh.
And like she would see, like I remember, and I have like pictures in my head now of like she would see like a woman with like laundry or see like a little boy running down the hall. And
that's creepy.
Remember like sitting in my mom's lap, like definitely not wanting to hear this because I was like scary.
Oh, scared, yeah.
But also like if I left my mom's lap, then that's even scarier, you know? And I know like, at this point, like, I don't even know if it's true because, like, my mom, like, usually didn't go there. And, like, why would I be sitting in her lap? And where were other kids at this time? Like, I have a lot of questions. But that comes up to me as, like, one of my earliest memories.
And feeling conflicted about do I stay where I feel safe or do I leave so I don't have to hear this?
Yeah. And I mean, that feels very that feeling feels very similar to how I feel about like scary stories now.
Yeah.
Which is like, I definitely want to know. And I definitely know that I shouldn't know because I'm a scaredy cat. you know, like I want to watch a scary movie, but I absolutely don't.
Yeah. Well, and it's also just inherently theatrical, that experience of like, if you stay sitting here, you're going to keep hearing the story.
Totally. And it is sort of like, like, the images I have, like, I've created the ghosts that she talked about. Like, they're very clear in my head. Actually clearer than the memory itself. And so, like, maybe that was just, like, a signal that, like, I had an overactive imagination. Because, like, those pictures are very, very clear. But, yeah. So, that's what comes to mind. It feels like cheating because I definitely don't think that's my earliest memory. But that's what came to mind.
No, I mean, yeah, it's like whatever is resonant when you hear the question. Yeah. Cool. And then so how did you get into theater? Were you doing theater as a kid?
I feel like I always sort of was in that, like, I was like, my mom's like only child and I was grew up mostly like living with her. You know, so I had my dolls and my stuffed animals and like movies. And, you know, my mom, like I never was never watching like age appropriate movies. Like my favorite movie, like 7, was Pretty Woman. And like there are videos of me at 4, like dirty dancing on tables. Like, you know, but like I spent a lot of time talking with my dolls and my stuffed animals, like people did in the movies, or like recreating a movie scene, you know? So in some ways I'm like, clearly like this was, you know, all meant to be, but, you know, I didn't like discover theater proper, probably until like fifth or sixth grade, my hoity-toity school, we did like a student opera in the fifth grade, where like cool. every student was like assigned a role. Like you applied for it actually. So like five students wrote it, and five students, you know, were the actors, and five did this. And I was Miss Responsible at the time. So I applied to be production manager because that felt like I had the most power. And so that's what I did. And I like remember having to like call about like asking a parent for lumber, like things like that. And like, you know, it's like whatever age you are in fifth grade. But that was like my intro to theater. And it was very much like not me on stage, it was me behind the scenes. And it wasn't until a few years later at camp that I don't even know why I auditioned, but I auditioned to be in the like summer play, which was like an abridged version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Mm-hmm. And I think I may have auditioned because I also knew that we were doing it that next school year. And so I auditioned, I got the role of Snout the Tinker. Nice. Who plays a wall in like the play in the play. I had seven lines. And then that fall when I went to school, I was really good at memorization. That's it. I guess the only other plays I did, I was always the narrator. So I was like the narrator as a kid. Then I had that like opera thing. And then I did this. But when I went to audition in the fall at school for A Midsummer Night's Dream, I'd like low key, like basically memorized the play.
Nice.
And like memorized like how other people did their roles. So like I went from being Snout the Tinker to Titania or Titania, whatever you want to say. And that was sort of like, you know, I stepped my foot into theater, into acting, and that was that. Suddenly I was a theater person.
Cool.
Yeah, it's my long-winded answer.
No, that's great. And then when did you start really writing your own plays? Yeah.
You know, it's so funny because I'm like, obviously people had to have like written plays, and obviously you should know that, but like I really didn't think that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember, like I think I wrote like a short play in high school just because, but like I didn't really think of myself in the theater as a writer. I was a poet, and I loved writing short stories, and so mm-hmm. that was sort of my writing. I think I wrote a short play for an assignment, and my advisor at the time, she had gone to Brown, which is where I eventually went. And so she got the alumni magazine, and and on the alumni magazine was Paula Vogel. And I was like early to like an advisee meeting with her. And she like looked at me and looked at the alumni magazine and was like, I think you should go to Brown and like study with Paula Vogel.
Wow.
And, like to this day, I don't know why. Cause like I didn't write plays. It wasn't what I did. But I was like, okay. and sort of like changed my like applying plans and applied early to Brown.
Wow.
And, you know, got in. And then eventually, like my junior year, took a class with Paula Vogel.
Isn't it amazing how somebody can say one sentence to you?
Yeah. And just change
that
trajectory.
Age. And it just changes the whole trajectory of your life.
I mean, I will say I do feel like my whole life and career in theater is like moments like that, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like somebody in my life saying the right thing at the right time and me mm-hmm. being like, I guess that sounds good. Like I honestly would not be here. I am not here by myself. I'm here because the universe sent a whole bunch of people in my life mm-hmm. to say the right things at the right time. And I listened at that time. And so, yeah, so like I went to Brown, still not thinking about writing. Like it wasn't like, I'm going to go be a playwright. And I, only reason why I started taking playwriting classes was because I was going to double major in theater and in creative writing with a focus in poetry. Mm-hmm. And in the creative writing course, you had to have a second genre. And people were like, take playwriting. It counts for both. And I did. And I was lucky to have some really great teachers who were grad students at the time, you know, they were teaching these, you know, basic classes, and they were so great because they like sort of pointed out that I had a knack for it. Mm-hmm. You know, they were just sort of like, you get how a scene works. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't gotten to that yet, but you get it. You're already making choices on the page. Like, do you see that? You know, and it was really them pointing that out to me that got me thinking, okay, like maybe writing plays is a thing that mm-hmm. I like to do. Again, still not what someone does for a career. I mean, come on. And then, you know, I wrote throughout college and stopped after graduating. And honestly, you know, really didn't write again for a few years. Because I really didn't think of it as something that people really did. So, yeah.
You said that... the instructor told you like, oh, I think you're getting this. You understand scene and all that. Like, where do you think having the experience of acting help you inform that? Like, where do you think that information came from? Like, how?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think some of it was acting, and just mm-hmm. like, you know, knowing like, this is what happens in a scene, you know. But honestly, yeah. I think a lot of it, and obviously, like, movies and television is different than theater, but the same principles are in a scene, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think I was just, you know, I was a nerd. Like, I know the movies that I love, I know like the back of my hand, right? And like, I think I just had a sense of like, oh, you hit this point in the scene, and then either like you cut from it or mm-hmm. you're lingering here, but you're lingering here for a reason, right? And I think a lot of it was just that kind of like, you know, my nerdy self watching too many Julia Roberts movies as a kid, that had some of that. And then, yeah, I mean, I think that acting helped. And then I just, you know, I was on like every theater board I could be on. So I was always watching plays.
Yeah.
You know, so I think all of that, like, you know, but I don't necessarily know, you know, because it's not like I was sitting there studying. Like, yeah. I'm really bad. Like, you ask me about structure, I'm like not great. Like, when I teach, I'm like, I will admit to my students, I'm not the teacher who's gonna be like, structure. Here you go. Like, that is not my strong suit, because my brain, like, it does it, but it doesn't understand it. Doesn't understand mm-hmm. what
happened, you know? You're kind of working through like intuition, would you say? Yeah. And impulse. Yes. Yeah.
And I know that like, you know, that's definitely like a and that's like a soft spot, or not a soft spot, but like a weird spot for me as a playwright, where I'm like, I admit like that I am not working in the same way that some of the great playwrights are, you know? But there is this sort of like feeling I get in my belly that's like, the scene should end now, mm-hmm. which I then can look and be like, okay, maybe this is what I'm reacting to this and blah, 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 blah. But it's certainly that thinking has had to come from teaching and from talking and from like actually looking at, you know, and studying craft. And honestly being in the TV world where structure is really important. But yeah, I think it's all, my playwriting feels like it's all guts for good, in good ways and in bad ways. It feels like it comes from this weird intuition place.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we're all naturally, it's in our DNA too. Yeah. Scores. Like, it's in it. And then, but it's just kind of figuring out like what, but yeah, it's so, when it comes to dissecting it and really thinking it methodically, it's like, I don't know. Right. I don't know. I don't know either.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's more, I like it better when it feels organic and intuitive. When I'm watching a piece and I can tell somebody tried to beat their story into a particular mold. It sometimes it feels a little too, like, I can see what they're doing with the structure, and sometimes it feels a little too heavy-handed. And I think it's a strength to just kind of organize the moments of your story by intuition.
I hope so. I hope it's a strength. But no, I mean, but I I think there are times when I see folks using structure in ways that I'm like, oh, like, fascinating. Like, there's like all these levels to this.
Yes. Yes.
You had to sit and figure that out, and it's like a puzzle. And there's something about that just like that I just like love, because I, you know, I like puzzles, you know. So I'm like, ooh, like a playwriting puzzle, you know. But then there are other times, to your point, that like, you know, and I've seen it with students or other playwrights where like become so concerned about the structure that the story kind of gets like left by the wayside. And really, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we're just telling a story, right? Like, that's right. We're telling a story, and we're hoping that the folks who are listening are following along. So yeah, like I feel like it's a little bit of both, but I do wish that, like, I am envious of the folks who can like somehow balance both sides of that, because I'm like, oh no, yeah. No, I'm not a structure girl. Like, I'm not gonna be the one. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, speaking of stories, yes. We got a chance to read your play. Yes. It's not a trip; it's a journey. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I was like obsessed with. Are we allowed spoilers here?
I'm the queen of spoilers, so yeah, that's my money.
I just had to say it, because my favorite, just like juicy theatrical moment in your play was the hairballs and the tumbleweed mm-hmm. moment. And I guess I was just like, at the end of the play, I just kind of walked away. I was like, I just can't stop thinking about this hairball. Like, I just can't stop thinking about it. And I just kept thinking, like, how would it look on stage? What did it look mm-hmm. like? I just mm-hmm. kept thinking. It was such a really juicy moment. Yeah. And so I guess I was so curious of what was the inspiration, like, what behind the play, like, what was an idea that maybe you're grappling with when you wrote it?
This was a play. So the play, for people who haven't read it, there's there are four Black femmes that go on a road trip to the Grand Canyon. Yes. And really, like, that's what started the play. It was like, I was like, I want to write a road trip play, in part because I've never been on a road trip and I find them fascinating.
Oh, interesting. You've never been on a road trip.
Never been on a road trip.
Well, you definitely fooled me with this play.
That is always my goal. My goal is always to trick people. Like, I wrote a play with twins once, and somebody was like, so, like, you have a twin, right? And I was like, no. And she was very mad at me.
Wow.
I'm like, yes, okay. But yeah, so no, I mean, I've been on, like, you know, trips where you were in the car for like 8 hours, but like, not like we are going to this destination, mm-hmm. you know, multiple days away. So that was like the idea behind the play. I want to write a road trip play. Like, that was where it started.
Wow.
It's interesting because, I got about 80% done with the play. And that 80% is very much like them going to these like weird places across the United States. But I got 80% of the way done, and I could tell where the play wanted to go, and I didn't want to go there.
Oh, and interesting. So I actually like
put the play down and didn't touch it for several months. Cause I was like, I was writing a road trip play. I wasn't writing a play about like someone having to deal with like a massive trauma, mm-hmm. and I'm annoyed that like my like fun road trip play is now gonna land here. Mm-hmm. And finally I was like, girl, that's the play. So, like, right, like,
yeah,
that's the play. And so then you know, I sat down and wrote what, you know, the last probably like three or four scenes of the play. So like,
wow.
So yeah, so I say that to be like, I think the like overarching like, yes, I started with a road trip, and then, you know, what does it mean to be like, you know, a Black person on a road trip? Like, that's mm-hmm. something that I found fascinating is in the play, you know. And then what does it mean to be a woman or femme presenting, you know, mm-hmm. And all of those things began to sort of seep in. And I can now look back and be like, you know, I was writing it at a time when like, I was also, you know, reading every book about like, you know, Me Too and women's anger and mm-hmm. and like, you know, sexual trauma and it, you know, I now can sort of point to like, oh, like that was clearly also on my mind in this road trip play, but it wasn't like I sat down and thought that that was like where it was going, to a point where all these, all four characters are sort of, you know, literally yelling into the void about all of these things. So yeah, and then like, and to talk about the like, the hairballs and the tumbleweed, like I honestly think like, you know, like I'm like tumbleweed, like West, I love all the like the stereotypes for like Western type things, you know? And then I think honestly it was my brain one day being like, oh, that looks like real tumbleweed, looks like a hairball. Mm-hmm. And like that being a thing and me being like, oh, now we're talking hairballs like in the play. And that's like very much like what my brain does. It's like one day I see something and I'm like, ooh, that's in the play now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like that was, I don't have a cat, so I can't speak to cat hairballs. But like, that is something fascinating to me that like, you know, like one might cough up a hairball, that it can be thick and contain something. And I feel like, I'll speak for myself, like when I've been through harder moments and I'm, you know, I'm crying and I'm coughing because I'm crying, it's like this idea that like, I wish I could cough something up. I wish I could cough up and out of me, you know, like I wish there was something tangible that could come out to provide relief. And I think that there's something to that in that moment when June is coughing up hairballs of like, this has been stuck in your throat. It's the phlegm that's stuck in your throat. It's the reason why you weren't able to say anything to anyone. Mm-hmm. And if you could be able to just cough that up and release it, like how, like, sort of wonderful. Yeah, I mean, the coughing up a hairball would not be wonderful, but like the, you know,
but just to get it out. Yeah.
There's like something, there's something to that, I think, just like as a human, there are just so many times when I'm like, oh, I wish this feeling that could be placed in a thing as opposed to just like this amorphous thing in my body.
I really love in this play how, yeah, all four of these characters have things that they're feeling, that they're experiencing, that they're going through. And then you find ways to give them landscapes or things in the landscape that help them kind of physicalize or embody the kind of abstract feelings that they've been having. And yeah, and I love that image of June trying to like release or express this feeling by literally getting it out of her body.
Yeah.
And then I'm also thinking about the big ball of twine. And...
yeah. So that's like my favorite part.
Yeah, it's so cool.
That scene, I always like if I could just like have that scene on repeat in my life, I would too. Mm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, and this is like, you know, like nerdy me is like, this is what I love about theater, right? Like, because no one, I mean, somebody might, you know, at first bat an eye about this person being like, rolled up as though they are a ball of twine, but then we just do it and it makes sense and we're okay with it. And I love that, like in a play that like isn't saying, oh, I'm not realistic, it's not like being stamped with that, like it still can have those elements, it still can have that element of theatricality, and we just go with it. And I think that's just like such a beautiful thing about theater. And that's why I'm like, oh, like even in the like, you know, most naturalistic of plays or whatever, like throw something in.
Right.
You know, just because I'm like, because we can and it's beautiful and we do it in the room and that's what it is. And I can't do the same thing in a movie and I can't do the same thing, you know, in another form. So like sometimes I feel like my brain is just like, we're going to, I was like, well, it's like, do we make a ball of twine? Or it's like, no. we're making Willy a ball of twine. Because that is, that makes sense. You know? But yeah, but that's, I mean, that's why I love playwriting. And then, of course, you just write it and then you're like, ah, sorry, I don't know how to do this. and designers roll their eyes at me.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's fun sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was really fun to read. I was thinking like how much the environment, like kind of touching on what Sam said, but the environment really influencing the relationship. Like there were moments where it was like the characters feel so small right now, even when the space feels so big and expansive, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Vice versa. Like, or the characters feel so big, but they're like in this cramped car. They're just, there's something about that, how the environment starts influencing the relationship and what's being said, what's not being said. And I just thought it was so beautifully written. And I was like, oh my gosh, subtext here is so deep. I'm like freaking out.
But I also, I will say, like, I think especially with this play, like I said, like I hadn't been on a road trip, right? You know, mm-hmm. and so like, you know, this is again, my dorky, like theater is great. You know, cause you get to have, hopefully you get to have like workshop or a time where you're like in a room with people. And like, I remember one director who I've worked on this quite a bit, Nicole A. Watson, like she's done lots of road trips. And she was like, she's like the car. She's like, everyone gets to hate everybody in the car. You know, like, and that was like, was a big thing. Cause it's like, sure. Like, you know, when I've driven with my mom, like I, at some point, I like don't want to talk to my mom anymore. But like, she was like, no. She's like, it is hot. Like it is cramped. And like, you could love the person next to you, but at some point you don't want to talk to them anymore. And like, just like, you know, and then people went around the room and were like, oh yeah, this. And I just feel like that, like so many of those details really came from people like sharing their experiences of like what they felt on a road trip or like what they felt at the Grand Canyon or like their equivalent of the like giant ball of twine. What's the weird thing that they went to go see?
Yeah.
You know, and I just, you know, it's like, it is, as playwrights, we might write the, like, the foundation, but I feel like this is a play that has grown to what it is because of the folks who have stepped in and out of it at different times to just be like, oh yeah, like I went there and this was my reaction, you know,
right.
And just like helped me, who's like, you know, literally looking at these places on Google, you know, I have a dream of somebody paying me one day to like actually do the road trip. So like, I can actually like, be like,
oh okay, yeah, no, go see all the things.
Yeah. That's like, that's really my dream.
Have you been to the Grand Canyon?
No. So okay. I like, this is also
we're putting
like,
this out into the universe.
Yes.
Somebody has got to get Charlie to the Grand Canyon.
Like, this is what I want. I want someone to be like Charlie, okay, like, the play is like good right now, but like we can make it better. Like, how about we pay for you to do this road trip to the Grand Canyon? And then I will be like, this is why I wrote the play. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And I will do that. But yes, so like all of these things, you know, were super helped by people who were like people like would send me their personal photos of like the Grand Canyon, and all of that. And I just, yeah, I would be remiss if I like didn't acknowledge that like the play, you know, is what it is because of the lovely folks who've stepped into it along the way, or the, like in, you know, the designers who like figured out how can we do hairballs? Well, we do magic trick, you know, like that's literally what one of the shows did was all sleight of hand, and a magician came in and taught the actor like how to do sleight of hand so that it looked like she was coughing up hairballs.
What were they made out of?
I don't remember. They were like,
or what they look like.
They almost looked like at the like a mic. You know the like the foam you put on the top of a mic.
Oh, uh huh.
It almost looked like that. Okay. I don't know if that was exactly it, but I do think it was like made to be able to be put in the mouth. So like so she, like basically
shrinking, like
Or like she would do something and like be able to put one in, and then by the time she turned around, she could cough it up. Right.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But it was small enough to be able to do that. But yeah, but it was sort of like amazing. They were like, I know we're getting a magician to come in figure this out.
So cool.
And you know, and I'm like, oh, so that is that is a possible thing. It's not a completely crazy idea, you know. you know, and then the tumbleweeds, I feel like they were dropped, but then like I think there was someone backstage just like throwing them. throwing tumbleweeds out.
I had no idea until I moved out to Colorado how tumbleweeds, because now I've actually been on a highway and seen them blowing across the highway, and they're huge. And they're there's many of them. And there are stretches of road where they pile up in these huge, huge piles, like bigger than a house, just against a fence of like tumbleweeds. I had no idea. Yeah.
Again, I saw pictures on Google of like, they were like, the storm brought in all these tumbleweeds. And I was like, that is crazy.
It's crazy.
You know,
where do they come from and how do they form? I mean, I have so many questions now.
Me too. Don't worry. Like, that's I would totally write a play about tumbleweeds if like that were allowed and wasn't going to be boring, but I totally would.
I'm pretty sure tumbleweeds could kill you.
Yeah, right. They're dangerous. I mean, if you're driving down the highway and you would not want to hit one.
No. Yeah. No. So yeah, can't wait for that play or movie. I would watch it.
Well, you mentioned the difference of writing for the screen, which you have also done. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the differences for our listeners who maybe have only written plays or are thinking about branching out.
You know, and I preface this by being like, I'm sure other playwright/TV writers will say other things.
you're just answering for you. Yeah,
exactly. And I also feel like there's no place that I feel more like a playwright than in a TV writer's room. In the sense of like, I'm like, oh, my brain does not work like y'all's brains does, which is not a bad thing, but it's just a moment where I'm like, my brain is not doing that. And the way that I get to a pitch or a way that I get to a question or something is just different. And that has been a big thing for me to sort of like recognize. But you know, I feel like the two things that really come to mind is like the big differences for me as a playwright is one, like I said, structure. Not being someone who like sits and thinks about like, this is act one of my play, versus in a TV writer's room where like, you know, even though I haven't written for like a network show where like act breaks are for commercials or something where they become important for that, you know, you're still thinking in terms of acts most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still thinking in terms of like getting to this dramatic moment at a certain thing that's going to keep somebody watching, right? That was just not a huge leap, but it is sort of like if I'm sitting down writing my own outline and I'm like thinking about act breaks, like that my brain is working in a different way than it did for than it does for plays that just doesn't think about act breaks in the same way. So that is a big thing. And I think one of the critiques that I sometimes get in my plays, which is fine, is like, hi Charlie, like what is the plot? What's happening? And I'm like, cool, that's a good question. Because I will just like, I'm just happy with people talking. And plot obviously becomes important in TV and film in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, we're moving the story forward. We're cutting between different storylines. Like what is going to get us to the end of this episode? What is going to drive us there? Like that all makes sense to me. And like the idea of like pitching plot to this day is like foreign language. Like I do it. And I figured out my way of getting there. And it's usually through character for me. It's usually like, okay, this person feels like they're about to have a nervous breakdown. What do you do when you feel like you're about to have a nervous breakdown? Okay, this. versus other folks who sometimes are in the room and they're just like pitching ideas. It's just like idea, you know, not that they're not thinking about like the story, the character, but it's just a different mode. I will ask a question about the nervous breakdown and half the room will look at me being like, why does she care? And the other half of the room gets, oh, she's asking it because like that's informing what happens next.
That makes sense. So it sounds like what you're saying is your way to the plot is through the character's experience and like it kind of has to make sense for you on that level.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. If it doesn't make sense to me for the character, then like I cannot pitch that. It does not make sense to me. Because of that, sometimes it takes me, I'm not going to be the person in the room who's going to give you the most pitches. I'm just not. Like that's not my strong suit. But I am the person that's going to be like, hey, like Roy did this in act one. Why would he do this in act three? Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't make sense. Like why not this possibility or why not this possibility or why not let him do that in act one and then see what happens, you know, like that's what sometimes I end up doing.
Cool. This is so interesting to me. Yeah. I've never done that kind of writing before.
And again, it's like, sometimes I feel like I'm definitely annoying. Like I definitely am like, oh, I'm the playwright in the room. I'm sorry.
No, they're fine. They're benefiting from your special perspective.
I hope. Because also like, I remember there was like one show I was on where they were like trying to figure out, they're like, how is this character going to know? Like, this thing has happened. And like, everyone's like thinking about it. And I was like, he drives by. And they were like, what? I was like, I have a scene where he has to go by. He drives by and he sees it. And they were like, oh. You know? I also feel like as a playwright, because we're so used to like holding all of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But like sometimes, like there were times in a room where I'd be like, I could hold the fact that in episode 5 they did this, in episode 7 we wanted them to do this, in a way that like maybe someone else isn't necessarily thinking about it in that same way, you know?
Yeah, we are used to thinking about like the story from each character's perspective, and holding all of that in our minds, I think.
And just, And there was one show I worked on where like there's a time we needed to cut an episode, and I was in the room with the two showrunners, and we were like going through figuring out what we could cut. And like, I don't, was I in the room in that time because like other people were rewriting things and they were better at it? Probably. But also, but it was also a moment where it was like, I realized also like, oh no. Like I know what it is to be like, if I cut this scene here, how is it going to affect the end here? For something that's not just an hour long sort of thing, right? And it sort of showed me that like, oh, I can look at the full thing. I can look at the full season and track in a way that like some other writers might not be able to. And that's not to say that all of us playwrights can do that, but like that was like a thing that I sort of learned that that I could sort of hold in a way for me to sort of enter that space. But yeah, I feel like those are two like ways that it feels different. And also just like it feels different because you are often if you're writing a TV show, you're writing like one piece of this whole story,
right?
Like yes, you're in the room coming up with everything, but like when it comes down to like what you were writing, you're writing like one piece of this puzzle. Which sometimes is great because there are definitely times being like, I could not write that episode. Nope, not me. And other times it's like really hard. And I realize, and I've never had a play, I think this is still true, where like two men talk to each other. And like
what's the word for that? The opposite of a Bechdel test.
I was just like, oh, I don't know how to write two men in a room. Like, I will be the first to admit that. And I love the fact that TV writers' rooms, you have multiple writers because someone who's better than me is going to come in and make what I wrote better. And I'm like, that is why this is a team effort.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, Charlie, because I'm working on a play right now that I'm trying to rewrite, and I have all these men in it, and I'm like, I really don't know how men talk to each other.
I've gotten a little bit better at it because I keep, you know, working on shows that like have like male leads, as you do, but it is something where I realized, I was like, oh wow, like I'm gonna write you like I would write anybody. But I get a feeling that, like, maybe I
they are need just to people say, after all.
Right? Like, I just need to do it. But, like, I also recognize that, like, I have spent a good portion of my life writing scenes between, women.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, but all of those sorts of things, I feel like, come into play in a different way, which is sometimes lovely and fun and sometimes nerve-wracking. And I also just feel like I am rambling now, but I feel like as a TV writer, what I write in TV feels very different than what I write in plays. And that a lot of that happens to just be like where I was staffed or whatever. Mm. But like, I also just like, it just works different brain of mine. I've like worked on a bunch of shows where it's like, there was a murder. And either we got to cover it up or we got to figure it out. And like, not that, you know, not to toot my own horn, but it's like, I can do that fairly well now. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like I can do that. And that's like, there's a comfort to it. And I'm like, there's a, you know, talking about puzzles like and structure, like I get that. Like I can do that. And that's like not what my plays are. My plays are I'm not going to say that word because my brain can't say that, but they are not linear often. They often are not driven by a plot. They're often not about like, you know, maybe it's not a trip. It's a journey. It's a little bit different because there is like a reveal of a thing, but it's like, it's not usually like that. And so I feel like my brain right now, works just like very differently in those two.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
But yeah, that's my
I'm wondering now to kind of reverse it. Like, why can't we write nonlinear, you know, like in TV or film? Like, why is that? Why can't we? Or like, or is there a show that I'm not thinking of that exists that works well like that?
I think that there are shows. I think about the show Atlanta, for instance, which, and not necessarily like non-linearly, although like they would have entire seasons where like half the episodes you're like, how does this connect to anything? But like, I remember watching the first season and I was like, what episode is this? The pilot or something? Where like, it like has this very like almost, like it feels like almost like magical realism or something happening because like things are erased, if I remember correctly. I'm gonna get this wrong, it's always gonna be mad at me, but there's things in like episodes of it, and my husband and I just watched the last season, and there are a few episodes where I felt this again, which is like my brain was like, oh, there's some like theatricality here, you're being allowed to like do some theatricality or do some magical realism or whatever you want to call it on screen. And we're just going to go with it.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah,
it was exciting. And there's another show. Oh God, what show? I'm not going to remember. But so I say that to be like, there was something about when I remember watching that first season of Atlanta that I was like, oh, as a, like my playwright brain gets this, like it gets it. And it is like, who would allow someone like me to do this? I'm not Donald Glover.
Right.
like, what do I have to do to be able to do that? You know? And so I do think that there are like other examples of shows that kind of get to do that. And I think the unfortunate thing is that like, it is often coming from someone who has enough quote unquote clout.
Yeah.
That like whoever the executives and the studio or whoever you know, they are kind of like, we'll let you go down this path a little more.
Like, they trust them to be a little weird and not go off the rails.
Yeah, go off the rails just a little bit. And you see that, like, even in, not that, like, something like a TV show like Severance isn't not going non-linearly or whatever. But, like, even that, there's, like, a, I'm like, oh, somebody is like, no, we're trusting the process, right, behind the scenes.
Right.
To great avail, often, because, like, you know, I'm naming shows that were, like, at least at some point were popular. So it's not that I don't think that, like, we can do it, but I do, like, what I experience as someone in that world whose instinct is to always do it the sort of the theatery way, if we're going to call it that, like, is the sense of someone always being like, well, that's not the way that it's done. Mm-hmm. This is better. And, like, I don't necessarily disagree with them. You know, I'm kind of like, sure, you know, that's what we're going to get, the predicted response if we do it this way versus playing with form or I'm not sure what other phrase I would use. Yeah. But
Because there's always a risk that your audience is going to say, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Or, I don't like it. This is too weird for me. Yeah.
Right. Or like that. Or like there was one show, I wrote an outline, and like the first sentence I say something like, oh, like, you know, such and such a person walks out as though he has a gun to his back. And the first note we got from executives were like, well, why does he have a gun to his back? And my boss had to be like, it's a metaphor. But it was like this moment where I was like, oh, like I have to be careful about putting metaphor in my outline.
Interesting, interesting.
Because
things
are so, are taken so literally. And so I bring that up because, like, if you're writing something that feels, you know, for lack of a better word, more theatrical, mm-hmm. and has elements of that, you don't necessarily know if the people who are signing off and the people who are reading it are going to actually get what you mean.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's a whole different skill in and of itself. Like, I've now watched, like, very skillful, you know, showrunners, like, essentially be able to put in things, because they framed them in such a way that, like, the executives and all those people, like, they put it in language they understood. And so that's also a question. Like, I'm not necessarily at a place where, like, I know how to do that. Right. But as I, like, sit and think about writing my own pilots and things like that, and, like, a pilot that, like, in theory I'm working on right now for myself, but really am not, you know, would have some of these more theatrical elements. And my big question is, like, how can I put that on a page where it seems like it should happen on a screen? Like, it is made for the screen, and yet is not going to line up exactly with what we expect. And how do I write that in a document that makes it understandable to folks who, like, haven't spent 10 years writing plays? That's a rambly.
Right. Answer. Or even just the thing I'm thinking about with that, as if he has a gun to his back, is like, that's such an embodied thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, just thinking about how in the theater, we spend so much time just working in, like, I mean, I should say, I don't know anything about TV, so if I'm wrong, like, just tell me. But I don't know. But in the theater, I feel like we've all been trained, and we've spent so much time with just bodies in empty rooms, mm-hmm. thinking about, like, what can the physicality of the body do, and what mm-hmm. stories can we tell with just the way we walk into a room,
right?
And my hunch is that for people who are coming from a TV background, that the language of that is just less present.
Well, it's you're kind of, I mean, and this is, you know, everything is, you know, it's not a platitude, but like, you're kind of encouraged not to write that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. You know, like in a script, like you're encouraged to tell enough about the character so we get it, but you're not encouraged to like, not that like we are as playwrights are encouraged to either, but like, to your point, like we usually end up in a room with the actors. To this day, is this true? In my TV life, I have yet to be in a room with the actors. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, that is also why we are on strike. Right. Yeah. So, like, you know, and that's a whole another conversation. But it's like, you know, you can be writing, and not necessarily like, you're not writing from that sort of like inevitable moment. Mm-hmm. And it's not really like. Like, I know as a playwright, a director is going to come in and, like, a lot of those things they're going to figure out.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. I right. expect, like, in my script, I might say how the person walks into the room. And I know that, like, they may do it that way, or they may try five different other ways to get what I mean.
Right, exactly. Way. And find right? something else that works. And that happens through the process of
totally.
Rehearsing totally. The body. Yeah.
But I do think that, like, in a lot of, you know, and this is, again, like, you have screenwriters and TV writers who write whatever the fuck they want. Excuse my language. And, like, they're going to, you know, they're going to put in all of that stuff, right? But, like, as, like, a newbie, you know, or newer bee, I'm encouraged not to write that, because that's also what the director does. That's what the actor does. The actor doesn't want to be told to do that.
Right.
And so I think there's a, I find that hard. And I often, when I'm writing a script, my first draft has a lot of that. And then I have to cut it out. And I have to, or I have to figure out another way of embodying that idea. Versus what I would just do in a play, which is like, I would just keep it. But I do think that you are right. Like, there is this sense that at some point as a player, I'm going to be in the room with everybody, mm-hmm. quite frankly, the designers, this or that, like, if, you know, and then of course there's a moment when you're not mm-hmm. in a great, beautiful way, like your first production, you're in the room. And then after that, you're not
right.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, and I remember somebody telling me that they were like, you're going to have a hard time with that. They're like, you like being in the room as a playwright. One day, if you get successful enough, you won't be.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
George said, yeah.
Yeah, George was like, that's exactly what he said. You know, and that's a little bit different. We're like, as a TV writer, at this point, I don't even know to expect to be in a room mm-hmm. with any of them. You know, I got to do one Zoom with a bunch of actors, but that's it. So there is some of that feels different. And for me, that is hard, because I think a lot of my plays and what I was told as a very like young writer was like, so much of what happens in your plays happens in the white space on the page. It's actually not in the words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is not necessarily, does not necessarily translate well to TV and film. And so I have to figure out what can be put into the words to embody what in my plays sometimes is in the white space.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. All right. Wow. A lot to chew on here. A lot.
Or it's just nothing. It's just some random word. You know?
So before we move on to Glistens, we got one final question for you. Yeah. What advice would you give to our listeners who are just starting out, like maybe you have an advice that you'd like to share with your students? Like, is there advice that comes to mind?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I often, and this is, I don't know if this is even useful, but with my students, I often teach at the college level now. And what I've noticed is like, there's, and it makes sense, like, especially since I'm like teaching in like the New York area, mm-hmm. like maybe, I don't know. I feel like it's different. I don't feel like I like left my theater program and was immediately like, how do I make it? But yeah, maybe I was in the minority, because I feel like
it's different now.
It's different. And, yeah, and most of my students are like, how do I get an agent? And how do I do this? And I'm like, oh girl, like I was not thinking about that at 22. And maybe I was just behind, you know, but but my biggest piece of advice to them often is like, you don't have to do it all right now. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And I say this because like I actually like stopped doing theater when I graduated college. I had a teacher who sort of told me, because I was mostly an actor, like that I looked 12 and I was always cast as mom. So like, if I liked anything else, I should do it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, all right. I mean, I do look 12 and I am cast as moms. You're not wrong. Let me try to do other things, you know? And I, you know, got a master's in women's studies. I like worked at a middle school. I was like on my way to being a social worker. And I was doing all this other stuff before a good friend of mine was like, wait, like I thought we both were going to be writers. Like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Again, another example of someone saying the right thing to me.
Yeah. Thank God for friends.
No, I know. I tell her all the time. I'm like, you're in every interview, because I would not be here if it wasn't for that phone call. But I say to my students, I was like, all of those experiences and all the jobs that I did and all the things that I was doing, that's all in my work. Like, it all comes up in my work. Like, there's so many times when, like, I'm writing a play and somebody was like, were you, like, a therapist or something? I was like, oh, I was a social worker. And they're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know? I just encourage, like, I just encourage people to, like, yes, like, keep writing it as your love. You want to do that, like, put your energy into that, 100%. But don't think, like, if you're also working retail at the same time, that that's, like, a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I worked in retail, and I was, like, I was a yoga teacher, and I, like, folded pants at Lululemon. And, like, I have yet to write a play about that experience.
Although but, there like, is yoga in mm-hmm. It's Not yes, a Trip, It's a Journey.
Yeah, true. You know, but it's like all of those things, like the play I wrote during that time is what eventually got me into grad school. Mm-hmm. It's a play that's like never really been done, and maybe it'll never be done, but like it got me to where I am now, right? Mm-hmm. But like I probably would not have written that play if I also wasn't like, you know, like folding pants and breathing all the time. You know, doing this other thing. And so I don't know, so like that's like my sappy weird, not, I mean, it's not weird, but like my sometimes annoying piece of advice to my students is like, you know, take the gap year that you want to take. Like, go do that internship that's in international relations. Like, yeah, go like
get some life experience.
And it's okay. Like, yes, we have all of these freaking awards and groups and stuff that's like, oh, if you're over 30, like everything is over. Like, you know, and so like, I get it. Like, I definitely get it. As someone who applied to one of those groups at 28, being like, you have to take me. I only have 2 years left. You know? Yeah. But at the same time, like, I'm really grateful that I didn't like immediately move to New York and immediately do certain things. That I had some time and some space to figure out like also like who I am away from the theater and what I like that's not writing. And like, because like, as much as I love theater is a headache sometimes, and it's mm-hmm. hard and it's emotional, and some days I'm like, what are we doing? And I'm like, right, like if need be, I know I can fold yoga pants really well. Like, that is like, hold on to that, right? Or like, or whatever, like, you know, silly or not silly thing exists, right? You know, like, you have like, what, you know, was it Sylvia Corey? She's a doctor. Mm. She's a doctor, a real MD, and also a playwright, and
just like Chekhov,
right? I'm just like, I'm like, they're amazing things, and I'm like, you can go like have and hold both of those things and or whatever amount of things. So that's sort of like my real sappy advice is to like not freak out if you're not like doing the path that like a certain five special playwrights have done. And like my other piece of advice, which is not necessarily, I feel like it's in the same vein, but it was actually an assignment given to me in grad school by Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, which was we like read all of Arthur Miller's plays, like all of them.
Wow.
And it was fascinating because then you see there's like a 15-year period where we know his plays.
Right.
We know them. We love them. We teach them. We see them all the time. And then there's a whole nother 60 years.
Wow.
Of plays that like most of us have never heard of that often recycle a lot of the same ideas. Like you realize, oh, we become obsessed with like three things. Most of us are probably writing about the same three things all the time if we actually sit there and read our work, you know? Yeah. And you can see how like someone changes or doesn't. And it was actually, it was like so eye-opening in terms of like careers are long. Attention is sometimes paid only for a short period of time. You know, not every play is going to be a banger, right? But like, you know, and what you're remembered for might be the ones at the beginning or at the end or in the middle. Like, you don't know. But like, he kept freaking writing. And I have sometimes suggested to students, you know, I was like, you know, if you have a favorite writer, you know, who's been around for a while, do that. Go read all of their plays. Go notice which ones you really love. You know, I have a few, favorite people and I'm like, oh, their plays that I love were written in like grad school. You know,
Or like sometimes what a gift it is to find a play by a playwright you love that like you've never heard of that hardly anybody does. And to just find it and read it. And it's so delicious. And I mean, it just is such a treat because it's like one you don't, that doesn't get talked about.
And I've suggested it to some folks because one, it's always just like Arthur Miller is not my fave. Right. But like, I now feel like I'm like, oh, I understand. I can get why we hold him up the way that we do sometimes. Or some people do, you know, I can have a respect for it. And I can like borrow some things and also be like, oh, I'm definitely not borrowing that. Right. And I think that's just like, it's a good, muscle to be able to read someone who's like, not necessarily your fave, but like, you know, someone who like has made a career in the theater and in playwriting and like, what are the things that they are doing or did that like make them successful? And like, that is good on its own. But then to just like in thinking about your own career and thinking about like, you know, the fact that like we might write 100 plays and 20 of them may get noticed or 10 of them might get noticed, but like you still write the 100 plays. And that is like a hard thing. I think we put a play in the world and we hope that people love it and we hope that people hold on to it and we hope that it gets somewhere. And it's a nice, like for me, it has been a nice reminder, like when I'm writing a play that I'm like, what is this? Does it even matter? Where is it going? Then I'm like, it's okay. It's okay. That will be when I, you know, am 100 and they put all my plays in a book. It'll be on page 57 and people will be like, what is this mess? And they'll going into the
there
next
you
play.
Go. Yeah.
You know, and that's okay. So anyway, I think that's like, I found that like assignment in the moment. I hated it, but in retrospect, I think it was one of the most important ones that like was sort of given to us or given to me because it just puts a lot in perspective and allows me to like be okay with the fact that like, you know, I'm not writing what I think is my like next great play in this moment. you know, it's a play and I'm working through it. And I guess what the next play I write might be about the same thing and it might be better. I just have to get through this one to go there,
yeah,
or so on and so forth. So I don't know. I don't know if that's like useful to anyone. I feel like my students roll their eyes.
I love that.
Both of those, but that is
that's a, you know what? I'm just thinking it's a good goal. Write 100 plays. Just
yeah, 100 plays. Write 100 plays. Just write some messy plays, yeah, and then seriously, have them be messy and make no sense. It's okay. It's fine. It's, you know, like, we'll write another one. I feel like there's not as much. There's not as much play, you know, yeah. Sometimes we get, you know, I feel like my students have been very focused on, like, you know, getting to this finish line. And I'm like, oh, you got to write a bunch of messy plays first,
mm-hmm.
You know, like you got to get in there. And then maybe one of them will, you know, be the next great thing and fantastic. But it's like, it's okay to figure out your voice and figure out what you like and figure out how you're going to change and all of that first.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're like, but also like, who's your agent? How do I contact them? One day, yeah. they'll remind, they'll, yeah, they'll write me a nice email in 20 years. It's fine.
All right. Well, this is part of our show. We do glistens.
Yes.
This is where we share our favorite glistens of the week. It can be something you learned or some news or something you discovered. So I'll start first.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been wanting to use this as a glisten for a really long time because I read this book early in the year and we weren't recording, but I read the book How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix.
Ooh.
It's really zany. Like, if you like, it's not scary as a lot of people. It is a horror genre, but it's very like campy, zany, and just really wild. But I highly recommend it for folks who want something to read because I really liked it a lot. It's like one book that I read like one book every 3 years. And then this is like the book I'll just like talk about for years.
Wait, it's remind fiction? Me the title again.
Yeah. It's fiction. It's called How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about these two siblings, parents pass away and they're trying to figure out how to sell the house, like get rid of the house, but you're finding out that's haunted. So, and then the whole book is about kind of figuring out like, why is it haunted? How is it haunted?
That's, so I just wrote haunted. A play about like a kind of haunted house. So now, ooh, I feel like I have to read that book.
Oh yeah. You should read it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. Just like your childhood memory.
I know. It's a, yeah. Yeah. Haunted house.
All right, Sam. What's yours?
My glisten is just fresh cherries, you guys. I went to the farmer's market. I got some really delicious cherries. And they're so good. And maybe just summer fruit in general. The fruit's just so good right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been singing to my son, August. I've been singing, it's stone fruit season. Stone fruit season.
Yeah, peaches also. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We're just so lucky to be alive. All right, what about you, Charlie?
I think I'm gonna go the book route too. I'm not done with it yet, but I'm reading Yellowface by R.F. Lang, which I feel like is everybody's like book club book. It's our book, my book club book also. And like I said, I'm not done with it yet. But it is a book that has given me the sensation that some like TV shows do, which is that like sometimes I'm like, oh no, you're making such bad choices. I have to close it and walk away. like it makes me anxious because I'm just like, this is bad. You're just so bad. It's like the car crash and I'm reading the car crash and there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm always just like really impressed when, especially in a novel, like a writer can like give me that sensation.
Yeah.
And like get me to the point where like, for like 3 weeks, I like did not pick it up again. So, and my friend was like, you have book club, Charlie. And I was like, I know, but I'm very stressed. So like now I like try to only read like 10 pages at a time. But it's also just like, it gives me that sensation. And also when I do sit down to read it, it does go like very quickly and like it sucks you in. So, you know, and as writers, it does, you know, wrinkle some some feathers and give me some heart palpitations about like ownership of story and mm-hmm. plagiarism and race and how people respond on Twitter to things. I think if you're up for that kind of experience, one should read it.
Cool.
All right. Well, I guess it's the end. Charlie, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And where can our listeners find you?
Oh, well, I just, even though I said Twitter is scary, I am on the Twitter, even though I don't do anything on there, but it's my name, Charlie, and then E Simpson. Mm-hmm. So you can find me there. You can find me on my website that has not been updated in a long time, which is charlieyvonnesimpson.com. And then I don't know where else you can find me. Like, I'm on strike, y'all, so like there's no TV show to watch.
Yeah.
And you're on the picket line.
Yep. So thank you for that. But you can find me on my couch is really what I'm answering. That's me for right now.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.